Well, I haven't forgotten, and I'm not going to forget. And my job in the European Union Parliament is to remind people that illegal acts committed by antitrust law violating corporations and organizations cannot go without criminal prosecution and cannot be allowed to persist. And as long as I get invited, I'll show up wherever I am on earth to make sure that message is heard.
Welcome to Germany, Mr. Martin, and especially in the best part of it, in Bavaria. Let's go through the questions. And number one is, what plans do you think the World Health Organization is moving forward with?
The plans that the World Health Organization has been articulated since 1955. And that is that a small group of people who enjoy absolute immunity from every criminal prosecution and every criminal investigation have stated an objective that says that there are few people who should control the destiny of humanity and control the population of the world. And their plans have not changed. They are still trying to control the destiny of humanity, and they are still trying to reduce the population of the globe, and they're using the pharmaceutical industry as their principal agent to achieve that goal.
And are you sure that the plan will work?
I'm certain it will fail. And I'm certain it will fail for a simple reason. The fact of the matter is that in ignorance, the vast majority of the world was convinced that there was a health crisis that was entirely organized, manufactured, and marketed by the World Health Organization and all of its actors. But the problem that they didn't count on is people like you and me, having real conversations, sitting face to face, not 6 feet apart, and having real conversations about the facts and the evidence that prove that they have always been set on this program, and they wanted to silence our voices. And if they had succeeded, then their plan would succeed. But they failed.
In the future, injections will no longer be tested for safety, and compulsory vaccinations can be legitimized by law. What risks do you see?
Well, remember, there hasn't been a single safety test of a vaccination or a genetically modified injection at all. So that's not in the future. That is the history of all of the injections that have been proposed by and implemented by the World Health Organization since their measles vaccination program started and since their malaria vaccination program started in the 1950s. There is no safety study that has been done. But more importantly, and this is what the public needs to understand, the mRNA injection platform, which has been rolled out during COVID, was never tested for either the safety of the injection or the safety of the ingredients in the shot. And so there has been no safety studies done. The public needs to understand that when they say safe and effective, that is marketing, it is not true. There is no science that has ever established safety. And more importantly, in the case of mRNA injections, the institutional review boards at every major medical center were told, and I quote, this was a straight-to-humans protocol. This is the first time in human history that we have actually injected an experimental agent into humans as the first test animal. This is not ethical. It violates every standard of science. It violates every standard of law. And this is the plan that they wanted to see succeed, and we are actively working to make it fail.
Please give us a few informations about your background.
Well, in the early 1990s, I ran Mosaic Technologies and IdeaMed, and what's important about both of those is that Mosaic Technologies was a company that did treaty-restricted technology transfer. We did that through the University of Virginia, where I was on the faculty in the medical school. IdeaMed was a clinical trials program that did clinical trials for the FDA. So my background is in commercial science and the conversion of technical capabilities into commercial reality. So I have actually been doing this for the last 35 years. But what's most important about this is in 1998, I was asked by the United States government to set up an organization that would allow innovation to be used in banking. And this is how we became aware of the biological and chemical weapons programs that were being done by the United States and their allies. And beginning in 2002, It's when we first discovered that the coronavirus model was going to be used as a bioweapons program in 2002, which got funded fully as a bioweapons enabling technology by DARPA in 2005.
Unbelievable. Since 2021, there has been a massive increase in many diseases, excess mortality, a collapse in the birth rate, and also a decreasing fertility. Do you see a connection with the mRNA injection?
There's no question there's a connection, and we knew it a long time ago. The most recent publication in 2018 said that the institution of pseudouridine, which is one of the synthetic amino acids used in the injection, was actually known to be a cancer-causing agent, and not just a cancer-causing agent, a cancer accelerant. That means that we knew in published science that the ingredient pseudouridine that's in the mRNA shot was going to actually trigger new cancers, but more importantly, reactivate cancers that were latent in the human body. So we know that the cancer effect is certainly directly linked to a single ingredient, and that publication was in 2018. So we knew this before the first shot was ever delivered. The second thing is we know that in 1999, Ralph Baric, the inventor of this particular biological weapon, developed a means to take coronavirus that used to make lungs and make the gastrointestinal system ill. And he developed a way to modify a synthetic version of coronavirus to attack the heart tissue. This was published in 2002. It was republished again in 2006 and again in 2008. So we knew almost 20 years before the first shot that myocarditis was going to happen. So anybody who says, oh, we did our best, we couldn't have seen this coming, is admitting that they have not read the published scientific literature that unambiguously says that the spike protein is going to harm the heart tissue and that pseudouridine is going to trigger cancers. There can be no question about that because that was a settled science matter in 2018.
Masks are returning in several countries and a new mRNA injection has already been approved. Is Corona and also the associated measures coming back?
Well, certainly the plan is to try to reinstitute a campaign of terror to make sure everybody feels that every one of their neighbors is their enemy and everyone that they see unmasked is a pathogen carrier. The tiny problem is there is a study that was done by C.R. McIntyre, funded by the National Institutes of Health, which gave rise to the April of 2020 recommendation by the American Medical Association that a healthy population should never wear a mask. That was based on a study by C.R. McIntyre, which is the only clinical trial ever done on mask wearing, which across 3 years showed in a multi-center, several thousand patient study that face masks increase influenza-like illness. So not only did masks not work, the actual only clinical trial that was randomized and actually placebo-controlled following NIH's own protocol, funded by NIH and published by NIH, says that face masks increase influenza-like illness. So if anybody's out there thinking, well, maybe they at least don't harm you, they're not following the science. Worse still, C.R. McIntyre, after the coronavirus pandemic got started, was bribed, and I say bribed because it was financially incentivized, to publish a literature review in which she set the time frame of what literature she was willing to consider, and you're not going to believe this, but the dates that were selected for her literature review excluded her own study, which proved that face masks increased illness. So she was paid to write her own science out of science.
What do you think? Who is responsible for the corona crime?
Well, so there are two different classes in that answer. The first is the actual perpetrators of the crime. Ralph Baric at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, unquestionably was the one in 2005 that said he was going to make biological warfare enabling technology with synthetic coronavirus. That's an admission to the crime. He was funded by Anthony Fauci to do this. And in 2016, his lab said that the Wuhan Institute of Virology virus, and I quote, was poised for human emergence. This was in 2016, during the gain-of-function moratorium. His work should not have even been done, but he was violating the gain-of-function moratorium, and in 2016 told the world that his weapon was ready for prime time. There's no question that Anthony Fauci funded every single dollar of this. There's no question that he had two checkbooks, one from the NIH, and he had another one from the Department of Defense. Those two checkbooks unambiguously show that on any particular year from 2005 up until 2020, Ralph Baerk in the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, received between $10 and $20 million per year to weaponize coronavirus. There is no question that Peter Daszak, who was the person who the world now blames for the EcoHealth Alliance collaboration with Wuhan Institute of Virology, was part of the criminal conspiracy because he said in 2015 that we are going to increase the public's understanding of the need for a pan-coronavirus vaccine. We are going to use the media to create the hype. We are going to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond, he said, if they see profit at the end of the process. Those three individuals unambiguously stated their intent to do a crime, their commitment to commit the crime, and their execution of the crime. But the organizers, which is the second half of the question, is the World Health Organization's Global Preparedness Monitoring Board, which in violation of the Clayton Act in the United States and in violation of the European Union's acts on all anti-competition, created what's called interlocking directorates. They brought together the directors of competing organizations, the Gates Foundation, the Wellcome Trust, Jeremy Farr, you know, all of these people, brought these people together and illegally price-fixed, market-manipulated, and deployed the plan, which in September 18th of 2019 stated that they were going to conduct a global exercise on the release of a respiratory pathogen. And by September 2020, they would have the world accepting a universal vaccine. That is their stated, published statement on September 18th, 2019, a full 3 months before patient number one in Wuhan. There's no question. There's no question who the perpetrators are. There's no question who funded it. Because when we then take the last step, who paid for all of this? The Wellcome Trust, the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, and the allies that currently fund the World Health Organization, all of whom are criminally complicit in actually funding one of the largest genocides in human history.
Can you tell those things also in America, in TV or radio stations?
Well, I've told it all over the world, and so far my last presentation in the European Union Parliament has now been seen by 4 billion people. So it's been told in China, it's India, all over Africa, all over Europe, all over America, all over South America. The penguins have even heard it, I'm sure, because somebody, I'm sure, played it in Antarctica. The answer is, we will always speak the truth, regardless of how popular it is. Because the fact is that every single statement I made is not verifiable by me, not by my sources. It is verifiable by the sources that were the evidence provided by the criminals themselves.
What about the American people? What do they believe?
Well, Americans are notorious for believing that somewhere along the line, the supremacy of America means that the American government must be, at the end of the day, good. And we forget that in the 1950s, we had a biological weapons program that even the Washington Post and the New York Times disclosed to the American people, when they actually said that we were aerosolizing toxins and putting them in subway systems in New York and other major cities. And we forget that. We forget that we were told that thalidomide was safe. We were told that DDT was safe. We were told that all these things were safe. And unfortunately, Americans have a nasty habit of forgetting that the same people who've told them things are safe wind up down the road saying, well, we paid a fine. We meant that we thought they were safe. They really weren't safe. And so they get away with it and they move on. The difference this time is a third of America, this time, 100 million people, realized that this was a fraud at the beginning. And they didn't fall for it. And this is a very hopeful sign because it took coercion, It took manipulation. It took threat of loss of job, loss of life, loss of livelihood. It took that threat to get the middle third of America to go along with this. So that tells us that only a third of Americans are dumb enough to fall for this game. And that is a very hopeful sign.
Before we start our interview, you told me that you are concentrated on the very special part of the population. Will you please explain that again? Because I think this is very interesting.
So there is about a third of the United States population that will fall for anything that the government says. Right now, if they say that a boy is a girl or a girl is a boy, they'll go along with it. That third is not concerned with facts. They are concerned with emotions. And I have said many times that I've never met a fact that can overwhelm a belief. The middle third of America is actually aware that there's something wrong, but because of their paycheck to paycheck livelihoods, because of the way they employ, because of the way they travel, because of the way they entertain themselves, they are subject to coercion. They wouldn't do a thing the government said unless there was a huge incentive to do it. And there's another third that will not accept what the government says because we fundamentally understand that the government has been corrupt for many, many years. What I try to focus on is the middle third. I try to focus on those people who, if they didn't feel alone with their thoughts, if they didn't feel like maybe they're wrong, if they had somebody who is a voice that said, that concern that you have, that sense that you have that maybe something's wrong, if they had evidence to support that belief that they have, they would actually stand up against coercion and tyranny. And that's the third we care about. We want to make sure that those people do not feel alone, do not feel isolated, do not feel marginalized. In fact, see that they're standing with a very large group of equally minded, rational minded people who are willing to stand against tyranny. And that's the third we need to convince.
At the present moment, you are traveling through Europe. Do you think that for the European population, it's the same with this three-thirds?
I think if you look at the data, it's very clear that the European governments, largely through the European Commission and through the World Health Organization pressure, tried to get people to follow for the story. And unfortunately, the population said no, which is the reason why we see in Austria things like the law passed that everyone had to be injected and the very strict vaccine passports and all of these other things. The fact of the matter is the program didn't work, which means that your third is probably a little bigger. I would say that that middle space is more like 50% of the European population, where probably 25% fall for the government. But the middle 50 know something's a little off. And the reason why I say 50% in Europe, so I say a slightly larger group in Europe, is because I think that enormous numbers of Europeans realize that the European Union was a promise of a better Europe. And there's a lot of people who now realize that that promise hasn't lived up to its commitments. And so I think that you have a larger population that knows maybe there's something off. And so I'm optimistic that Europeans probably have a larger convincible population than we have in the United States. But at the end of the day, the problem is still going to be the same. The minute we can help people see that having distrust in government, having uncertainty with a mandate that feels wrong should not make you feel isolated. If you know you can stand with your fellow citizens and you know that you can stand together against tyranny, then you'll have the courage to say no to the next round.
Let's go back for a minute to America. What about the situation of Joe Biden? Is he popular, still popular in the US?
No, as a matter of fact, as many polls as they try to make, Joe Biden is an abysmal failure, not only as a president, but as a member of the Democratic Party. Joe Biden has been and will be forever known as one of the most corrupt presidents we've had and most incompetent. If you look at things like his executive orders, if you look at behavior that he has done in public, where he can't articulate a compelling message, even getting past the hello and welcome phase of reading off of a teleprompter, you see that we have a person who is literally not present at a full psychological functioning level. If we are the land of the free, the home of the brave, the shining light on the hill, this is the most embarrassing head of state we could possibly have. Now, I'm not suggesting that the current candidate pool from which we're selecting are the best of America. But this is a very important observation that the world needs to know, and that is that right now, to even consider a viable candidacy, you need to have somewhere around $3 billion of money in advertising, in marketing, in campaigning, and otherwise. And if you think that the best humans on earth all have an extra $3 billion in their pocket, you've got a bad picture of democracy. We do not have a democracy right now. We have a marketing campaign that is done every 2 years, where what we do is see who can outspend each other by maligning the other side. But there isn't another side. This is a game. It's theater. And the theater is well-funded on both sides so that we have a tiny margin of victory or loss every time we have an election. But that's because we don't have a credible candidate. Because a credible candidate would get 80% of the vote. Somebody who had the ability to have integrity, who could stand in front of America and say, when they're wrong, they're wrong. When they're right, they're right. When they're confident, they're confident. And that person is not in the race yet. But that person will emerge.
Has Trump another chance to be one more time president of the United States?
Well, if he's running against the cardboard cutout that we currently have, I think he can win. Because I think that Joe might not make it to 2024. I don't know that his health looks like it's that strong. But I don't think that a land that once elected the likes of Thomas Jefferson or John F. Kennedy, I don't think that America is overly excited about two 80-year-olds fighting for that office. And I think America's ready for something else.
What about Kennedy?
Well, Kennedy, if he was wise, would realize that this might be the year that an independent is the path to take, because the Democrats have stacked the deck. And his insistence on running as a Democrat is standing in the way of the opportunity he would have to articulate a very clear, compelling alternative message. Right now, he has to play to the Democratic Party's platform. And the minute we actually have him stepping out and saying, you know what, the system is corrupt, and since the system is corrupt, I'm offering an alternative, I think that's the only path he might have to being relevant. As long as he tries to stay on the Democratic ticket, he doesn't have a chance.
Last question. You will travel from Zion in Bavaria to Zurich and also to the European Parliament. What is your job in the European Parliament?
My job has been the same since I first uncovered the biological weapons programs I discussed in Europe in 2002. And that is to remind us all that in 1947 and 1948, the world stood together to say that the crimes that were committed in Germany should not be repeated. We got together, we held trials, we built protocols, and we ultimately built laws that said that it should be illegal for humans to engineer biologic or chemical weapons that harm humanity. And since 2002, I've been the lone voice in the world highlighting the who is doing it, the who is funding it, and the pathways that we as a public need to take to inform ourselves that the will of the people in 1950 has been violated. And as long as I have air to breathe, I will be a voice that never stops reminding us that we as a people said this was wrong. We as a people said never again. And in 5 years, we forgot how long never was. Well, I haven't forgotten, and I'm not going to forget. And my job in the European Union Parliament is to remind people that illegal acts committed by antitrust law violating corporations and organizations cannot go without criminal prosecution and cannot be allowed to persist. And as long as I get invited, I'll show up wherever I am on earth to make sure that message is heard.
I wish you all the best.
Thank you
very much for your time.
It's an honor.